Good morning, all. The first case for argument this morning is Alexander versus the City of Milwaukee. Ms. Horwitz.
Thank you. Good morning.
Ms. Horwitz, if you would like, you can lower the podium a bit.
I think this is all right. I'm comfortable. So long as you can hear and see me.
We can.
The issue on appeal today, Your Honors, is whether the members of the Fire and Police Commission, a citizen oversight board, should be granted qualified immunity for their role in approving promotions to the rank of captain, where they considered diversity in that rank a compelling interest for operational needs and used a method narrowly tailored under the circumstances. That principal issue addresses liability. We also have issues on appeal for damages. I will first address qualified immunity and then go on to address damages, principally the question of the improper award of punitive damages against these commissioners, as well as the legal standard that should have been used in assessing proportionate damages for a loss of chance promotion case. The defendant commissioners are, or were at the time of this of these events, members of the Milwaukee Board of Fire and Police Commissioners during the time that Arthur Jones, who was also a defendant, was chief of police. The board is a...
Is that a full-time job or what?
The commissioners are not... It's not a full-time job. They are citizen volunteers. They are compensated to a small degree. They meet twice a month, plus conducting various trials of disciplinary matters and background investigation appeals.
Are they paid?
They're paid, I think, $4,000 a year for their duties.
Is this an elective or an appointed office?
It's appointed. It's appointed by the mayor and confirmed by the Common Council. They serve for that term and are subject to reappointment.
Are their actions final, or does the mayor have a veto power over the members?
They have final authority over certain matters concerning the fire and police departments. Then there are other matters for which they do not have authority. For instance, budgetary issues have to go before the Common Council.
How about the matter of promotion?
And the matter of promotions, they were the final policymakers with respect to approving the promotions. They are also in charge of the competitive examinations. These promotions that we're talking about today are exempt from competitive examination. The positions are subject to the nomination by the chief. The commissioners have only the role of voting up or down on the particular nominations. They are not in a position under the statute, under 62.50, to select nominations themselves.
Has this body published any regulations, any policy statements, any documentation whatsoever as to the criteria it will use in determining who it will approve for a captaincy?
There is no stated published criteria for the rank of captain. The statute puts in the hands of the chief the discretion to select someone, but indicates that it should come from within the department. In other words, the chief of police is to select someone who is a member of the department unless there is some reason why they would have to go outside the department, and historically they never did.
And this directive is found where?
In Section 62.50, sub 9 of the Wisconsin statutes.
Thank you.
I
was just going back.
Have these people ever heard of strict scrutiny?
These citizen members of the board had... at various times probably heard the term, but they're not lawyers, and I don't know that they thought in terms of...
Is there a lawyer assigned to them that they can consult some city lawyer?
That's true. They do have access to legal requests for legal opinion.
Did they ever ask for any legal opinion about discrimination?
Not in this context, no.
Before what context?
Well, I'm sure that there had been...
What do you mean you're sure? What does the record show?
The record shows that there had not been a request for a legal opinion with respect to whether or not it was advisable or permissible to evaluate the chief with respect to considerations for diversity in making exempt promotions, which is the role that they took, which led them to...
Seeking
to what led them to being defendants in this case. That's true.
Do the minutes of their own meetings reflect any discussion or consensus before as to the criteria they were going to use in reviewing the chief's nominations?
There is no meeting at which it was discreetly discussed. Their testimony indicated that they believed the chief needed discretion in putting together command staff and that their role was to hold the chief accountable for running the department. And therefore, the role that they took in approving promotions was to seek to know whether or not the individual nomination was someone who was qualified. That is to say, someone who had a good service record, someone who had experience on the department, someone who had a plan in mind for the type of captaincy that they were being promoted to. I think Commissioner Welsh, who was the chairman throughout most of this time, his testimony indicates that they had an interest in knowing the person's ability to interface with the community.
But didn't they testify that they didn't ever take race into account?
They testified that they did not consider race in determining qualifications. That's true. So they did not, for instance, review a promotion, a nomination, and consider whether or not this person is qualified as a black person or as a Hispanic person or as a female person. They just looked at their qualifications with respect to their...
Well, the jury must have disbelieved them.
The jury found that they had participated in discrimination by approving these promotions.
Well, also it means they didn't have enough. They can't, on the one hand, testify that they didn't take race into account, on the other hand, that they had an affirmative action plan.
Well, I don't think this was described as an affirmative action plan. I think it was described as seeking to increase diversity in the exempt ranks.
Well, I don't understand, whatever you call it. How can someone at the same time deny that he's considering the race of an applicant and at the same time saying he's striving for diversity?
Because they are encouraging the chief to use diversity considerations in who he nominates. So it's a semantic difference between saying,
well,
I'm not considering Mr.
It sounds more like a lie to me than a semantic difference.
I think that it is a...
Anyway, couldn't a jury find these people were lying?
The jury found that there was discrimination, but the question on appeal is whether or not that was unlawful discrimination, considering that they were acting in the interest of a compelling interest and under a narrowly tailored
plan.
No, but
look, you can have an affirmative action plan if you don't consider the race of the... I mean, if it's affirmative action for blacks, you've got to consider race. I don't understand what you're saying, actually.
We're saying that the commissioner's role in this did take race into account by virtue of their deference to the chief in evaluating the chief to say to the chief, we would like to ensure that diversity appears in the exempt ranks. For many, many years, the city of Milwaukee had striven to open up the department for operational needs to have a diverse police department. They had done very well in recruitment, but they continued to stress that. They had done very well in having a greater number of new entry level hires, but the rank of captain by 1996 was still 90% white male, and about 88% white male in particular. At the time that Chief Jones took office, there was evaluation forms created for his term that went on throughout his term, and each time the commission was interested in promoting diversity through the recruitment, through having the chief consider diversity in the selection.
What effort did the commissioners make to assure that Jones was appointing the best person for a job?
They did not undertake an evaluation with respect to any qualifying differences between...
So they didn't do anything. They just rubber-stamped his his nominations?
They interviewed the individual candidates. They reviewed service records.
What were they
records.
Looking for when they interviewed them?
They in the interview process, they were looking for how this person could articulate their role as a captain, what they had for their own service record in terms of how they had interfaced with community groups, what they
well,
had done.
Did they inquire who else had applied for the position and what that person's qualifications were?
This was not a situation where there
Your
was...
Your answer, what, yes or no?
No, there was no application period. The chief had the discretion to choose whomever he wanted, and he chose...
What do you mean he had discretion to choose whatever he wanted? Was that the commissioner's position?
The
he
commissioner's...
He could choose anyone he wanted?
Anyone who
what
would be
qualified.
What did
they think their role was?
Their role was to interview the person nominated and determine whether they felt this person was qualified, and to monitor the chief. And they did have a monitoring role. There was a report in 2001 which the plaintiffs
so
criticized.
So if Jones had only nominated black people, black men, say, they would have gone along if they were satisfied by the interview that the person was competent. Is that what you're saying?
I'm saying they
No, is that what you're saying?
No, I'm not saying that.
What would have caused them to raise a question if only black men were presented to them?
They would not view that as truly a question of
what
diversity.
What is the evidence they would not have chosen? There are probably many black people competent to be captains. So what if everybody he presents is black? They interview him. They satisfy themselves this person is competent. Is that how they would have proceeded?
They would not have been giving Jones positive evaluations for diversity if everyone was black, because they viewed diversity as including Hispanic, whites.
How could they know whether he was competently administering some diversity standard if they didn't take account of the race of the nominees?
Well, they did in when they did the evaluation, because their testimony was...
Horowitz, if I may interrupt you, how can you be sure the chief is carrying out the diversity goal if there's no comparison with the body of names submitted to them versus other applicants? I mean, just almost statistically looking at it, how can you satisfy yourself as a commissioner with diversity being a goal that it was carried out, whatever the final number is that submitted or various description of background. Don't you need to have an assessment of the applicant pool, I guess, to satisfy yourself that the chief is appropriately appointing?
Well, we're talking about a relatively small number of persons here.
Makes it easier, doesn't it?
Well, the commissioners are seeing what's coming on a periodic basis.
So why didn't they just ask him, who else did you consider for this job?
Well, I don't know that they didn't. There was testimony.
What do you mean they don't know? You don't know that they didn't. What does the record show?
The record shows that Commissioner Welch testified that they tried to have an ongoing dialogue with the chief, and that at various times their relationship was worsening and it was more difficult. He sometimes described it as going into...
Well, I don't know what you mean by ongoing. Did they ever ask for some information about the other people who'd been considered?
No, not that I know of. The question on qualified immunity is whether or not reasonable commissioners would have thought themselves violating a clearly established right. The case law in this area of describing a compelling interest in operational needs for diversity in a police department has been in the literature and in the case law for an extended period of time. And the question of what is narrowly tailored has been very unclear in the law for a long period of time. When we finally get to Grutter being decided in 2003, we have actually a set of facts that is very analogous to what occurred in Milwaukee over this period of time, and that is that by looking with a very flexible standard of personal interviews and qualifications as compared to not having a quota, not having a certain set aside of a number of positions.
No, but the University of Michigan had a plan. You know, it had people who were charged with enforcing the plan, and they were very aware there was a strict scrutiny standard that they had to satisfy. Here there's no plan. These people are apparently unaware of the strict scrutiny standard. They don't do anything. They just defer to Jones.
The issue of what they do is what they testified that they do. It's unfortunate that they didn't have a written plan because we could have brought...
It doesn't have to be written. They didn't have an oral plan.
I think
that, no plan.
That the policy and procedures that they...
They had no procedures either.
Well, they did have a procedure
with
respect.
No, they didn't have a procedure. That is, they had no procedure by which to verify that Jones was carrying out a diversity policy in a way that would comply with the Supreme Court.
They had a policy of...
I mean, the one thing that, you know, all these cases, Grutter, Crows, and all of them say, you can't just say, well, we want X number of blacks. You have to, you may give them an extra point or something, but you have to look at the qualifications of the white people. And, of course, that's what these, your clients never did.
My clients were faced with a set of nominations at any given point and looked at the qualifications of those who were nominated.
No, look, suppose someone, Jones appoints someone, and he looks confident, but suppose that he turned down someone who had an IQ of 200, you know, and a PhD in criminology and everything else, and former police chief and so on. That wouldn't pass muster under any Supreme Court concept of affirmative action.
The
would it?
I'm not suggesting that
it
would not.
No.
It would not, and there is therefore not a request to grant qualified immunity to Chief Jones. What we're saying, though, is that the commissioner's role in this was very distinct.
No. That's not the point. The point is these commissioners can't say to Jones, well, as long as you don't appoint only black people, that's fine. You're promoting diversity. They have to make sure that Jones is not completely neglecting white candidates, white eligibles, who may have very superior qualifications to a given black. That's the essence of that's the duty that the Supreme Court imposes in Grutter and Crozen and all the others.
I think that the commissioners could arguably have done more, but what they did
No, wait a second, could arguably have done. You're not even contesting the illegality of what they did. How can you say they arguably could have done more?
In terms of requesting more information from the chief, they could
have
requested more.
They had a legal duty to do more. You're just arguing qualified immunity. You're not defending the legality of their behavior.
That's true. We're not...
So why do you talk about arguably they had a duty? They had a legal duty to do more.
The case, though, also involves the question of punitive damages. And whatever faults they may have had for not fulfilling a specific duty does not rise to the kind of malicious or willful...
Well, don't they understand there's a concern even with discrimination against white people? And therefore, if you're in a responsible position, you're actually responsible for the appointment of these people. Aren't you reckless if you don't acquaint yourself with the most basic legal duties that go with such a position?
There was a finding of discrimination. That does not imply in and of itself any recklessness. They had, in the interest of
well,
trying
just
to...
just flip the races and ask whether you'd be making the same argument.
Yes, I would, Your Honor, and the reason is that this was not a situation where it was all African Americans. This was 41 promotions. 20 of them were to white males. We're not even talking about whites versus blacks here. We're talking about white males as though it's in and of itself its own category. If you were to look at the white versus black or the male versus female, the statistics are not as dramatic as the plaintiffs contend. But they've isolated white males as opposed to the rest of the body of non-white males, including white females. What the commissioners were seeing annually was a very reasonable mix of whites, blacks, males, females, and they were all qualified. There is no contention here that any of the persons who were promoted were not qualified. What's contended here is that there were more qualified white males elsewhere.
Precisely.
But that doesn't give rise to punitive damages, that they were acting recklessly or in callous disregard. Nothing was presented to them as a complaint on the part of any individual or entity or organization that there was any discrimination occurring. I'd like to reserve time for rebuttal.
All right. Thank you, Ms. Horwitz. Mr. Retko?
Good morning, Your Honors. I'm Bill Retko, and I'm the attorney that represents the plaintiffs in this case, the 17 white male lieutenants of the Milwaukee Police Department that claim discrimination in race and gender in this case. The defendants in this case have raised two issues this morning that I'd like to address that we've just discussed, the qualified immunity and more particularly how that affects punitive damages. They're making a claim that just because they were found intentional, that they intentionally discriminated against these 17 white men, that it was not malicious or reckless. The evidence in this case was quite contrary to what has been presented in oral argument this morning. More specifically, the commissioners had a rule in place that would have allowed them to request Chief Jones' reasoning as to why he made any nomination that he made for the promotion to captain. They never enforced that rule until the very last promotion of Charles Hargrove in March of 2003. They blew by it. In fact, there was an instance earlier on in this case, a year earlier, where Chief Jones nominated a very young lieutenant who had less than a year of experience, a black male by the name of Andre Williams. And he was going to appoint that person to be the district number two commander. And district number two was a very hot district in the city of Milwaukee at that time. And the commissioners, Commissioner Welch in particular, questioned as to why is it that you're promoting such a young captain to this position. So they decided at that point in time they would enforce their rule to ask for the first time ever to have Chief Jones explain his reasoning as to why he was nominating Andre Williams to captain. And on that particular date and time, through that procedure, Chief Jones told the commissioners he was not going to provide his reasoning, and the commissioners accepted that. And they approved Captain Williams for promotion in any event. So it's not that they didn't have a rule in place to request Chief Jones's reasoning. It's just they didn't enforce their rule. And what's even more egregious...
That individual is not the subject of this lawsuit, right?
No, he's one of the promotions that we claimed were discriminatory.
Do we have anything similar to that in the 17, where there's an apparent youth issue or lack of qualifications, Mr. Rutgers?
Well, here's what happened in the 17. Chief Jones, the nominating process was something like this. Chief Jones viewed his position, his statutory position as police chief, as giving him total discretion on who he could nominate. Now, the statute itself did not limit him to nominating just one person. It just says make a nomination. The Fire and Police Commission could have required that he nominate more than one person, but he never did. Chief Jones had no criteria for who he selected. No postings were ever made. He considered all the plaintiffs in this particular case eligible to be captain. He considered all of them somebody he would promote to captain. The reason I'm giving you this background is to try to answer the question. So what he did then was, based on his subjective views of what he determined he needed at that particular time, he'd pick somebody. And what it amounted to was he ended up picking, out of the 41 promotions, 20 went to non-white males. And all of our plaintiffs in every particular instance were in that pool of candidates to be selected from. So they, Chief Jones admitted they were eligible for each promotion. He also admitted that he considered many of the plaintiffs for each promotion. The record is unclear as to who he considered exactly, and the record is unclear as to what his thought process was on any particular promotion. But this much we know, that when he made his nomination to the Fire and Police Commission, they approved every single one of them.
I don't find in your brief, Mr. Edko, any evidence or any argument, excuse me, made that the commissioners knew that Chief Jones was allegedly violating federal law. I'm speaking now to the issue of punitive damages, of course.
Oh, well, let me get to that, because here's where it ties in. Is the commissioners, first of all, blew through their rules and didn't request the chief's reasoning. So they're derelict in their duty as the gatekeeper. They're reckless in how they're handling the gate. Second of all, there was a DMAL report completed in September of 2001, a report that set out the demographics of the department, and more particularly in regard to how the ranks, how the demographics in the captain rank had changed during Chief Jones's tenure. And in doing that, every commissioner was supplied a copy of that document. There's plenty of testimony that indicates that Ms. Dimmel emailed that document to all the commissioners. The executive director, Joseph Czarnecki, supplied it to all the commissioners, and Commissioner Welch admitted that all the directors would have been given a copy of the Dimmel report. The Dimmel report basically said, listen, in 1996, African Americans and other minorities were underrepresented in the command staff. But by 2001, it's now reversed. White males are underrepresented in the command staff in comparison to the entire department, not just even.
What constitutes the command staff? What's the number, raw number?
Okay, there's 24 captains. I believe there's 5 deputy inspectors. There's 2 full inspectors. There's 3 deputy chiefs, an assistant chief, and the chief. That's the command staff. I think it's about 17 people, if I recall correctly. Or 7. Strike that, is about 40-some people, including the captains. And that's the command staff. And the command staff...
At the time of that report, these commissioners, in your view, should have been alerted that there was racial parity, if you will, in the department?
Correct, especially...
And then they're presented with a... I'm not analyzing their performance here. I'm just want to get the facts. Then they're presented with this apparent parity number. You know, of 41, and it's 2021, right? So would you say a layman without the aid of counsel against the backdrop of the case law, informed as you have suggested that there's now parity in the command structure, are presented with facially a balanced number, would in the performance of their duties, perhaps inappropriately carried out, acted in a reckless manner?
Yes, and the reason I say that is because the DMAL report also gave you a breakdown of the ranks, the demographics, and the lieutenant rank. And in that demographic, it clearly showed that the lieutenant rank had always remained at 83% to 89% white male during that time period. And in that particular report, I don't recall the exact percentage breakdown, but the report clearly showed that the lieutenant rank had remained pretty constant at white males.
Your position that the feeder ranks were so heavily white, I'm assuming white males.
That's correct.
Perhaps inappropriately, but white males, that should dictate and put them on notice that in a given year you could not have a basically 50-50 split because you had an 80-20, what I call feeder base.
Especially since they were rating Chief Jones on his diversity performance, okay? Every year they sat down and evaluated this particular police chief on how well he was diversifying exempt positions, in other words, the command staff. If that's one of their goals and objectives, to find out, are we diversifying the department, then when they get a report that gives them numbers and says white males are now underrepresented, and they took no action on that and did nothing to correct it, but yet continued to give Arthur Jones perfect scores on his ability to diversify the command staff, that clearly contradicts and slides against what the defendants have argued this morning, that Chief Jones and the commissioners were trying to diversify and that they would have considered white males in the diversity of it,
again,
but they clearly didn't.
Again, to the issue of punitives, with thinking about reckless or callous disregard, could in a given year the chief have had the leeway to not necessarily reflect what I call this feeder group? And I mean, could they have, again, maybe in error, but I'm speaking now on putatives, would they, this lay group, unless they chose, unless, are you suggesting because they didn't have a city attorney in the room, that's part of their recklessness and callous disregard?
No, that's not it. They're callous
disregard.
Should
we take that into account, if that is the case, that they had no attorney? And these are, I'm assuming, lay folks, maybe incorrectly. I don't know what their background is.
Well, even as Attorney Horowitz has indicated this morning, they had an attorney available to answer questions if they wanted him.
So your position is they're not calling in counsel as part of the reckless and callous disregard?
I don't know if that was even an issue in the trial in this case, to be honest with you, Your Honor, because I don't know that that ever came out during the testimony that you're reckless because you never called city attorney to get advice. But what happened in this particular case was that Chief Jones made a nomination. They had no understanding as to what his reasoning was for how he selected these individuals to be nominated. He had four people still in their probationary period that were nominated and approved by the board. All four were non-white males. 11 of the quickest persons promoted out of the rank of lieutenant to captain were all non-white males with less than 2 years' experience in the rank. 19 of the 21 quickest promotions to the rank of captain were given to non-white males. And in comparison, you look at the white males that were promoted and nominated over that time period, 17 out of the 21 white males that actually became captains through the lieutenant rank or inspector rank had over 5 years of experience in the rank of lieutenant. And more importantly than that, statistically speaking, no matter how you cut this, whether you divided it up in white males versus white females or white males versus any other category, and no matter whether you took them from just the patrol bureau getting promoted to patrol bureau captains or whether you took them from the Criminal Investigation Bureau to Criminal Investigation Bureau captains, no matter how you sliced it, it came out to where Chief Jones statistically could not have picked these nominees randomly 5 out of 10,000 times. There was a definite overtone that he was selecting.
Yes, but that brings up the following question. It seems very odd that the punitive damages awarded against the commissioners is the identical, if I'm correct, the identical $17,000 awarded against Jones. What's that about? Isn't he more culpable than they are?
As the gatekeeper, it was their duty to ensure.
Yes, I understand, but wasn't he more culpable?
At the outset of the testimony in this case, we heard Captain David Dowski, who was a white female that was promoted to captain by Arthur Jones, have a conversation with Arthur Jones, at which time the chief told her he promoted her because, all things being equal, he was always going to promote the non-white male.
Well, how is that responsive to my question?
Take it a step further. And he also said that he told the Fire and Police Commission when they hired him that's how he was going to act in promoting people to the position of captain. And his reasoning was, they knew that's what I was going to do. They hired me anyway, so therefore they must be approving what I'm doing. So if that's a particular mindset in this case, they're just as culpable as he is, and maybe even more because they didn't follow their rules to properly screen these individuals to ensure that discrimination was not taking place. The only plan that Milwaukee had in this particular time period was to discriminate.
Did you ask the jury to award the same amount of punitive damages? Did you give them a number at all?
I gave them an overall number as to what I would like to see, but I did not say in particular, here's the number to present against Commissioner so-and-so, here's the number to present against Chief.
How did they pick $17,000 per defendant, per plaintiff?
I have no idea other than I'm guessing maybe it's something that $1,000 per plaintiff per defendant. Because there are 17 plaintiffs. They discriminated against 17 individuals. $1,000 for each individual take that times 17, I'm thinking. I'm not sure.
What's that last 17? I mean, I understand how they might award, you know, $1,000 for each of the plaintiffs. That would be $17,000. But how does it become 17 times 17?
Well, it was $17,000. If I recall right, all 17,000 individuals earned $105,000 in punitive, something like that, 17 times 6. Something like that. I can't recall the numbers exactly. In fact, my math's already wrong. I can tell that now. But in any event, then you take that times the 17 plaintiffs.
It's over 200,000.
Yeah. So that, I'm assuming that's how they arrived at it. But to be honest with you, I have no idea how they arrived at it. It wasn't based on any argument that I made.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And more specifically, these interviews, let's get back to those. There were several individuals that came before the commission, and the commission always felt like before we approve a person for promotion, we'd like to know where they're going to be stationed, where they're going to be located. Where are you going to put them, chief? Where are they going to be? And many times the commissioners admitted the chief nor the nominee knew where this person was going to be placed within the department, and they still approved it.
Were the commissioners always unanimous in these personnel matters?
Every single one except for Andrew Wims, and that was a 3-2 vote. And the two dissenting votes were Commissioner Welch and Commissioner Subcheck.
Well, did they get some consideration when it came to award of punitive damages?
Yes, there was a footnote in the special verdict that the jury wanted to ensure that Commissioner Subcheck did vote against one of the nominees, but they still awarded the same punitive damages against him as all the others.
Right.
So it apparently didn't matter, but they wanted it noted in the jury instruction that, yeah, he did, but that's why they still arrived at it. It's also important to note in this particular case in regard to punitive damages that they understood Chief Jones was not necessarily a reasonable person, but yet they still felt like they had to support Chief Jones in every nomination by approving everyone that he placed before them.
Now, as to your prior statement, what's the evidence of the record as to his unreasonableness?
Okay. Chief Jones.
Knowledge of.
Yes. Chief Jones had publicly announced that two of the commissioners in particular were Uncle Toms when they. Chief Jones, toward the end of his tenure, had kind of a rocky relationship with the Fire and Police Commission. Everything was real smooth up until about 2001, 2002, that time period. Things got rocky at that point. He did not like the way they started to evaluate him generally on his overall performance evaluations. He went to the NAACP and announced that the two commissioners, two African-American commissioners, were Uncle Toms, and that he felt they were selling him out to the white massa, who was then Mayor Norquist, who was a white male. And he publicly announced that Mayor Norquist was Massa Norquist. In addition to that, the commissioners had always felt like, at least Commissioner Welch, that Arthur Jones ran the Milwaukee Police Department much like a tractor factory was run in Stalin's Russia. In other words, a tractor would go in the factory, it would come out with the steering wheel on backwards, and no one would fix it. And that's kind of how he viewed what was going on in the Milwaukee Police Department during this time period.
Well, how does that comport with the assessment that they were rubber stamps?
Here's the whole point. The whole point is that they knew they had an unreasonable person over there and that he was selecting people to present to them. But yet, they did nothing to find out what his reasoning was to determine how it was he was making these nominations to them. And they had rules in place that said, we need to know your reasoning. We can ask you for that reasoning, and they never question that. That makes them unreasonable in that they knew somebody like Arthur Jones was making these nominations, but they never challenged them. And they just basically, to a person, said that we approve Chief Jones's nominations because that was our role as Fire and Police Commissioners to support the chief in his decisions. When in reality, that wasn't their role. Their role was that of gatekeeper, to make sure things were run above board, to make sure things were run properly, to make sure people were not being discriminated against. But yet, that's what happened in this case.
So if the commission had looked at the entire applicant pool, which is obviously your argument, as opposed to just what was presented to them, and there was some room, some subjective room on making selections. In other words, you had more qualified folks than you had positions. Or would they have to present their view of who should have been selected and replace the programs submitted by Chief Jones?
They could have at any time during this process told Chief Jones that we'd like to see more nominees to select from. They could have told him at any point in time, we don't accept that nominee, we'd like to see other nominees. And they never did that either. Instead, they accepted whatever he presented and they approved it.
What if they misread, let's take a hypothetical, misread what was required under the law and under a diversity or affirmative action program? Could that be a possibility in this case?
No, it is not a problem.
They should have been aware of the kind of discussion that we're, you and Ms. Horowitz and the three of us are having.
That's correct. And the reason I say that is it's common knowledge. They knew what discrimination was. We asked them during the trial, what's your definition of discrimination? They told us. And most of them said promoting somebody to a position within the police department based on their race or gender. And then they, all to a person, denied that they ever considered race or gender in the promotional process.
Was there any inquiry made of their understanding of the law during the trial or in deposition?
Other than my questioning of, did you understand what discrimination is? And they said yes and gave me their answer as to what they believed discrimination was. And then they went ahead and approved these promotions in any event. The other thing that should be noted here is that the commissioners should have punitive damages assessed against them if for no other reason than that the promotional process that was in place was not always followed. Sometimes they receive resumes, sometimes they didn't. The interviews were 15-minute long. No one could ever recall what was generally discussed at these interviews other than what Ms. Horowitz said, which is generally how do you roll the view of captain in the police department, you know. Things like that, nothing in particular. Chief Jones, they didn't reject a single one of Chief Jones's nominees. They never did anything to ensure they were getting the most qualified candidate.
Well, is there any suggestion that any of the 41, putting aside the racial component, wouldn't have qualified as at least deserving to be in the applicant pool?
No, they would have been in the applicant pool.
If you asked if they looked at their resumes and they saw were satisfied that they looked like they had the minimal qualifications, and then you ask mainly what you see as the role of a captain, why would that be an insufficient inquiry, at least in the as to this interview component?
The reason is because they knew, and Commissioner Johnson testified, all we were looking for was the least minimal qualifications possible to approve you. And their overriding factor was we're not looking namely to see if you're the most qualified. We're not even concerned about your qualifications all that much. We just want to make sure you're the least minimally qualified possible. And if Chief Jones nominated you, we're going to put you in that position to support the chief.
That's one commissioner so testified.
Yeah, and that was pretty much parroted by several of the other commissioners, but one commissioner specifically said that, and that's Commissioner Johnson.
Were they provided with the sometime in advance the records of these applicants?
Did they come to
the meeting with some preparation?
The only thing they were provided with was what's called the department's hard card, and that's a picture of the person, their personal information, birth date, married, that kind of thing, their home address, telephone number, and then it lists all of their department assignments that they've held since being a police officer. And then on the back of the card it has their meritorious arrest, demerits meaning disciplines, and that's basically what that information contained. Toward the end of Chief Jones's tenure, he was requesting that resumes by these people, his personnel person, Val Watson, would contact the nominee and say, listen, can you put together a resume for me, which I'll present to the Fire and Police Commission so they can consider your nomination.
What's the tenure of a commissioner?
Well, that's a good question. I don't know that for sure. You'd have to ask Ms. Horowitz.
Can the mayor remove Could the mayor or the council remove at any time?
It's never happened in Milwaukee, but I'm thinking that the mayor and the council has the ability to remove commissioners if they so desire. But it has not happened, to my knowledge, in the city of Milwaukee. Everyone, to my knowledge, has pretty much served their term, with the exception of Commissioner Johnson, who quit in the middle of his second term here and just recently left within the last year. But generally speaking, they serve their terms.
And we don't know what that term is.
I'm thinking it's 3 years or it might be five.
I'm wondering what the tenure and experience was of the commissioners, that if the record shows that, who were participated in this review process.
Well, we do know this, that Commissioner Welch had been appointed since at least early 1998 or late 97. Commissioner Cross and Commissioner Johnson had been on for a considerable period of time, since at least 98. Commissioner Subcheck came on, I believe, in 1999, and Commissioner Baca came on in, I believe, 2001, before the Dimau report came out.
So the record in this case would reflect, in most cases with these commissioners, some evidence of their practice over five cycles, or however often these come.
Yes, they've got definite evidence in this case of how they treated more than one nomination and how they worked through several nominations. And the evidence in this case is overwhelming, that they just basically rubber stamped anything the chief provided to them. And one thing I do want to mention in rebuttal to something I saw in the defendant's brief was that they had argued that Exhibit 102, which was a document that the plaintiffs put into evidence on every promotion showing the seniority ranking of all the lieutenants at the time of the promotion, was used to show that more than one white male was being discriminated against, namely not just plaintiffs but other white males. That document was used during trial to show that the non-white male that was actually promoted by Chief Jones catapulted over so many more qualified or so many more senior lieutenants that it was unbelievable, and also to show that generally Chief Jones picked the senior most non-white male lieutenant for promotion on any particular promotion, whether they had 2 years on or less. It didn't matter. He came down the list and picked them, and there was many white male candidates more qualified, more specifically the plaintiffs in this case. And that's what I wanted to rebut, just so that that's clear for the record. I appreciate your time.
Thank you, Mr. Redfield.
Thank you.
Ms. Horth.
Now, there's something curious about this. One of your clients is Arthur Jones, but what you say about him, you didn't make any arguments for him. You say defendant appellants do not dispute the liability judgment or punitive damages award against Arthur Jones individually. There is evidence of record that former Chief Jones acted with willful intent to discriminate based on race and without regard to any compelling interest in diversity. Did he consent to this?
Your Honor,
why doesn't he have his own lawyer to argue, you know, that he wasn't a willful discriminator?
The undertaking to define issues on appeal include an objective review of the record, and when we reviewed the record, we saw that there was a big distinction between the evidence with respect to Jones.
What did Mr. Jones say?
He was kept informed of this whole proceeding, Your Honor, and he has chosen not to take any action individually. We are representing his interests as well as the other defendants.
You're representing his interests?
In the sense that there was no reasonable...
You've told us that the punitive damages award against him is fine.
Whenever there is a claim on appeal, you have to assess whether or not it would be...
What is he appealing?
With respect, Your Honor, there is no appeal on behalf of Mr. Jones.
He is listed as an appellant.
He is on the caption.
No, he is listed as an appellant.
The award of compensatory damages and economic damages also concern the judgment against Jones. And there
you just said he wasn't appealing anything, that he's just in the caption. Now you've just switched around and says he is appealing.
I respectfully admit that I should have indicated earlier in response to your question that damages are on appeal with respect to all defendants, including former Chief Jones, and that in the issue of damages, which includes the improper assessment of back pay.
Well, is he an appellant or not?
Yes, he is an appellate because the award of damages went to that as well.
Because first you said he was just in the caption.
Well, I correct myself.
So he is an appellant.
He is an appellant. Yes. The couple of things on rebuttal, just for your information.
Why didn't you argue that the punitive damages awards to the commissioners should be lower than to him? You make this sharp distinction. He's guilty. I understand you think that punitive damages should be zero, but wouldn't you have an even stronger argument that they should be lower?
Yes, we have argued that the punitive damages in any event should be lower.
But you just argue it for you don't suggest there's some anomaly in the fact that the jury awarded the identical punitive damages.
I think we do mention that in the brief, and that it indicates that there was really an inappropriate assessment of punitive damages.
Well, what do you think would be the maximum reasonable punitive damages for the commissioners?
Well, with respect, Your Honor, I don't believe any punitive damages are reasonable against the commissioners. There's no evidence of...
So if we disagree with you, you're stuck with the $17,000. You don't have an intermediate position.
I think that it should not exceed a reasonable ratio, and we have argued that as part of our in our brief. What's difficult here is that the 100 and some as that is awarded universally against all six defendants as compared to the compensatory awards is unreasonable, and it is an it is a unique case in that the way the district court submitted this, it created this grid which produced the verdict that you see. The defendants had objected to the submission of punitive damages in that fashion and had requested a special verdict form that would have individually listed each of the six defendants and inquired of the jury to make an award with respect to each of the individual plaintiffs. But the district court chose not to submit it in that fashion. And the fact that the jury did not distinguish not only between the chief and the commissioners, but even amongst commissioners, because some of the commissioners were on the commission for only a year or two. Some of the commissioners were there throughout most of the chief's tenure. It didn't really match up to any logical presentation. There was really, I think, just a reactivity to it, as what, not an examination of the facts. Mr. Redko talks about a testimony from a Captain Davidowski as indicating that there was some evidence that the commissioners were in cahoots with the chief with respect to only promoting minimally qualified persons. That's not true. Mr. Redko knows that the commissioners that were involved with this case did not hire Chief Jones and were not on the board when that supposed testimony would take place. There is nothing in this record which would indicate that these commissioners had knowledge that discrimination was occurring in the nomination process per se. You can argue that perhaps they should have done more, but there's no evidence of any willfulness. The Dimnow report that he makes mention of is a report generated in September of 2001. It reports an underrepresentation of white males in the command staff. The command staff is actually 35 persons. There's 25 in the rank of captain, and then there's 10 others in other higher ranks of deputy inspector, inspector, assistant chief, etc. So of that very small number of 35, the underrepresentation we're talking about is three people. And for that footprint in time to show an underrepresentation from such a small statistical base is really not dramatic evidence that there was some nefarious conduct that they should have corrected immediately. Not only that, but what were they to do? Was the commission then to disapprove any further promotions to anyone who was not a white male?
No, they just had to ask for information about other eligibles.
Actually, with respect, Your Honor, I think that their duty was to have a reasonable inquiry.
That's a separate question. You asked what could they have done. I'm telling you what they could have done.
Mr. Redko has indicated that they could have requested him to present several nominations.
That's
at the same time.
That's another issue. I'm just saying they could have asked for information about the other eligibles. That's different from multiple nominations. There's nothing to prevent them from asking that, is there?
It did not occur to them to ask that question. They did have the rule that was referred to.
Well, that's kind of really ostrichy, isn't it? I mean, sure, it doesn't occur to you to ask the most elementary questions. Who are the other people you're passing over? I mean, he made this good point. You'd think that if people still in their probationary period are proposed for promotion to captain, you'd ask Jones, well, probationers, isn't this early? Is there nobody else who's qualified, who's, you know, experienced person? Why wouldn't it occur to them to ask that?
They testified without contradiction that they viewed the rule as being they could vote up or down on particular nominations.
They thought they couldn't ask Jones for more information?
They did ask Jones to report on his reasons for making the particular nomination in 2002.
Did they think they couldn't ask him for information about other eligibles?
I don't know that it came up in that context.
Did they think they couldn't? There's some rule against that.
Had that been the history?
That's not in the history.
Anything in the record to indicate that this is for the life of these commissioners, not these commissioners, but of the commission, that inquiry just wasn't made, some custom and usage had developed? Is that what you're saying?
I think that their view of what they could do under the statute was to vote up or down and to make inquiries. But whether or not they asked specifically what other qualifications or what have you done for other qualifications, they did not view themselves as having to seek the most qualified. That's true. And the law does not require them to seek the most qualified. They did have a reasonable way of interviewing persons. They always did have the resumes. I'm not sure.
Well, you're not saying they acted reasonably, surely.
They had a reasonable process in place.
No, they violated the law. You've agreed to that.
I think that the, with respect...
You've conceded that. They violated the law. So how can you say they had a reasonable procedure?
Many times there's a reasonable procedure which still results in a finding of liability. The resumes are always of record, and they did always interview these persons at some length. I have a red light. I have to step down.
Can I just ask, as a footnote to this argument, I assume the commission process still continues at this time. I mean, there's a commission in existence.
Yes, that's true.
Is the city attorney attached to the commission?
Yes, there is.
And just speaking as a matter of interest, so now there's counsel in attendance at these proceedings? Or?
Well, there's not counsel necessarily at a interview of candidates. There is currently a change in the process by which nominations are produced, including a promotional board, and other formalities are in place. That's true.
Okay. Thank you. Thanks to all counsel. The case is taken under advisement. The court will take